Step into the world of power, loyalty, and luck.
I'm gonna make him an offer he can't refuse.
With family, cannolis, and spins mean everything.
Now, you wanna get mixed up in the family business.
Introducing The Godfather at ChumbaCasino.com. Test your luck in the shadowy world of The Godfather slot.
Someday, I will call upon you to do a service for me.
Play The Godfather, now at ChumbaCasino.com.
Welcome to the family.
No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. 21 plus. Terms and conditions apply.
It's time for the Del Olalea Show
on ESPN 97.5 and 92.5.
Now, broadcasting live from the Veritex Community Bank Studios, here's Del Olalea.
When the world was a time of this and that, I was young, didn't know to hold it back. Now we're here in the world, something else. We could leave any day and call for help. We were gods, nobody was above me. The A on my chest like a Dolce. The A on my chest, put your fist up. The A on my chest like a chipmunk. Alvin, Theodore.
Hour 2 begins with... Well, we got three people ready to go, so we'll get to them as quickly as we can. Let's start with Julian, who wants to talk about Jordan Love. What's up, Julian?
Finally, the Brock has come back to Mobile, mate.
All right.
A few points.
Probation. You're already on probation. Watch it.
So Jordan Love is what, 4 years older than him?
25.
He's been in that offense for. So he's been in that offense for 4 more years. He has a better. He had a better O-line than CJ came in last year. CJ did it the whole year, not just the last half of the season. All this this rah-rah for Jordan Love, I'm not saying he's a bad quarterback. But what I am saying is people need to pump the brakes. And, I mean, let's be real, man. When Brock only did it for 9 games, everyone said, oh, well, it's just the system. Well, damn, he's been in that system for 4 or 5 years himself. Can't be the system. But, yeah, man, nice to be back. Y'all have a good one. And
we're
going to rock out with the Brock out this year.
All right. That one is almost gets you banned, too. But it's better than the 49er one. Look, everyone likes the new face. Now, and it's funny, you mentioned Jordan Love's been around a long time, but comparatively speaking. But I think the thing about it was, and much like CJ, it was a surprise. No one expected Jordan Love to be that guy. A lot of people were wondering if the Packers were going to have to draft a quarterback, particularly with the class that was the 2024 class. People were wondering, was Jordan Love going to be a guy that the Packers could believe in and attach themselves to, or were they going to have to make a move for quarterback? Turns out, they don't have to. Yes, CJ did it as a rookie. Jordan Love's been around in the NFL quite a bit. He had time to sit and watch. Not sure how much Aaron Rodgers was teaching him. Not sure that's Rodgers' bag. But, hey, there are differences. But I think the comparison is one where you say first-time full-time starters, not a lot of expectations attached to either, and they both clearly jumped over those expectations. And now, if you want to call them young stars, you can. I would go, let's see it 2 years in a row. But I think Jordan Love is going to be one of those dudes where the Packers, I guess, hit on 3 straight quarterbacks. I'm not saying 3 straight Hall of Famers, but it's a pretty good run for them to hit on quarterbacks 3 straight times and have, well, what are we talking about now? If Jordan Love's a great player for the next 8 to 10 years, we're talking about 30-plus years of great quarterback play. Now, it's only resulted in 2 Super Bowls. Through the first 20-plus or so. But, you know, some of that's Mike McCarthy. Now, they did have Mike Rome, granted. I don't think anyone has a real issue with LaFleur. But I think the Packers have done the least as far as winning titles when it comes to having as the type of quarterback play they've had. Maybe throw in another title.
And they're 2 for 2 on dramatic exits for him, too.
True. I don't know if Jordan Love's going to wind up a Jet at some point, but history says he will be. If the Packers could hold on to one of their legends, and I'm not saying Jordan Love's going to be that, but if we're just going by the trend, maybe they'll hold on to one, and this guy retires as a Packer as opposed to leaving and heading out the door. But if you can continue to lean on your own ability to pick quarterbacks, maybe you say, hey, Jordan Love, 8 years from now, you get out of here too. We'll just draft the next one. It's been a remarkable run, all the jokes aside, for the Packers. Any other franchise in football would love to have the streak they're on. I guess the Colts were going to be next until Andrew Luck retired. We'll see what Anthony Richardson is. Let's go with Eric, who wants to talk a little Copa America. What's up, Eric?
Hey, Dog, great show. Hey, after the fiasco at Miami during the championship game, do you see any precautions the United States is taking in the World Cup 2026? And do you think Messi would be healthy enough to play in 2026? And what about the Cowboys? Do you think Trey Lance will get a shot with the Cowboys this year? And I know you know a lot about the Houston Anchors. I heard Myra Moreno was single again. Is there any truth to that? I hang up and listen.
You know I don't know anything about the Houston Anchors. Cut it out. I don't know anything about Myra Moreno's relationship status. So let's start from the top, because he did have some actual things to discuss. The U.S. and FIFA will combine to make sure the venues for the 2026 World Cup, well, I guess you throw in Mexico and Canada, all three nations are involved. But as far as the U.S. is concerned, the USA, I guess the U.S. Soccer Federation and FIFA will handle that. They have a different procedure. Hell, we go back to like 2016 for Copa, where the U.S. Federation was more involved in the security measures and the handling and the administration of tickets and getting people into the building. We didn't have the problems we had in Miami. Now, blame is being pointed. Coma Bowl is pointing at Miami and Hard Rock. Hard Rock is pointing at them. But from what I can tell, it was Coma Bowl who handled that, the South American Soccer Federation. They were the ones in charge of the tournament, because if you're in charge, you get more money. You bring a traditionally South American tournament to the U.S. for the money, for the exposure. So I imagine things will be better. And you can always lean on this. Hard Rock Stadium hosts international soccer events, hosts Super Bowls, hosts F1, and you never hear about issues. It just so happened that in this situation, I think Coma Bowl took precautions they should have taken lightly, and you got this result. Thankfully, we didn't hear of any incidents once the game began, because the reports were they couldn't even check weapons. They had to let people in to avoid the crush. So unticketed people were in, and then they eventually, at least some of them, got removed as cops were walking down the aisles in the stadium checking tickets. But just be thankful that nothing serious happened as far as violence or an injury once things settled down. So that was great. The all the things that preceded it, not great. I don't think we'll see that issue here. I think there'll be a better plan. Pena wants to talk about a movie and a college football game. What's up, Pena?
Oh, hey, what's up, Dale?
What's up, man?
Yeah, I have a few questions. I get my game tomorrow. I know I've been hanging up on you too fast. This is what I do. But I was wondering, does U of H have those uniforms that the Stumps were trying to not let them wear? And I'm taking my mom out tomorrow to go watch Twisters for her birthday.
Okay.
Are you interested in that movie? And thank you. Have a great day.
I appreciate it. I am going to watch Twisters. I don't know if it'll be this weekend, but I will watch it. I haven't seen the U of H Powder Blues in the game. I imagine if they were, because I've seen clips of people playing with Houston, or even just local, I think it was a Houston reporter put a clip of the Cougs in the game, but I didn't see the Powder Blues being worn. Maybe they are, and he just chose not to. But I would imagine if the Powder Blues are in there, they'd be a featured set for people to play with.
So I checked yesterday because I have the 10-hour a preview from EA Play. I didn't notice them, but Rice had theirs in.
I did see Rice's. I did see. So maybe Houston at the time EA needed uniform concepts or what are you going to play with in 2024? They had made a decision about permanently keeping them, or at least keeping them and playing with them, because we know now after initially being shook by the NFL and potential litigation, they weren't going to have the uniforms. Now they said they will. So maybe in a later update, now that the Cougs have made the decision to keep them, that you'll see them. A good call, Austin. Rice does have theirs in. I think mostly because no one was paying attention to Rice. So the NFL didn't send them a cease and desist.
It's like they were different enough to where the NFL was like, "Ah, oh, you're fine."
Yeah, and the color isn't the same type of vibrant light blue, sky blue, or whatever, or whatever Columbia blue, whatever the color is that is getting people upset. It wasn't enough of that in Rice's uniforms to make people take notice. Plus, it's Rice. I don't know. I mean, let's be honest. But jokes aside, I think it was more about the color than anything else. But they did have their own version. Oh, also, Eric asked about Messi. I forgot that part of it. I don't think Messi is going to be healthy, mostly because he's going to be old as far as soccer is concerned. How old is Messi right now? We're talking 2 years. Now, people didn't think he'd play in the World Cup, the one that in 2022. Certainly didn't think he'd be around for 2024. So I will never rule it out. But Messi is, at this point, 37 years old. So can he play at 39? He would turn 39 in the middle of that World Cup because he was born on June 24th. So maybe. I won't rule it out. I don't know what else he has to win. He's now got multiple Copa Americas. He's got a World Cup title. What else is there for him? It'll just be about motivation at that point. Maybe Inter Miami asked him and pushes him to hang around because they're trying to open a new stadium. There's a question of whether he'll be even around as they open that stadium. Inter Miami is getting a lot of push and energy from Messi and all the Messi friends when it comes to Busquets and Suarez being there. But the likelihood of all of them being there by the time that new stadium opens, considering they've broken ground but they're moving very slowly, it's kind of low. So maybe Inter Miami, for their investment, says, "Hey, can you hang around for one more year? Make sure you get to our stadium, and then make sure you play for the World Cup and be a representative of Inter Miami." That could happen, but we're pushing it at 39. We'll see what he is as a player. Probably will still be pretty good. I think it'll be a lot about what he wants to do if he has the motivation to be in world class shape. And would Messi consider being a super sub? Because I think if he wanted to play 35 minutes a match as opposed to a full 90, Argentina might have a spot for him. Just get him on for a free kick or something. A couple special moments maybe. But we'll see. It's less than 2 years away now. But Messi, what he did avoid was any controversy over being on that bus when the Argentinians or the Argentines were singing a song that the French Federation was not thrilled with. And apologies have already had to be sent out because of what was said. He wasn't there. He had that injury. He avoids that. Messi's kind of Teflon. And in that case, he wasn't hiding in the back of the bus. So he escapes any scrutiny there. We are wrapping up this segment. If you want to get in, 713-780-3776. We'll welcome anything you want to talk about. You heard we ran the gamut from college football to video games to college football uniforms in video games and also soccer talk. So get in if you want, 713-780-3776. And when we come back, I'll remind you about what you can do to be in this studio possibly with your podcast on the YouTube channel. We'll talk about that when we come back.
You're back inside the Veritex Community Bank Studios with Del Olalea. I mean, you're not actually in the studio, but if you watch ESPN Houston's YouTube channel, it's kind of like you are.
No, not really.
So, sound is filtering out from Texans training camp. D'Amico Ryan spoke about 35 minutes ago or so. So, we'll get to that. And I talked earlier about I haven't heard anyone kind of push back on what the Texans can be this year. Well, someone who has been on this station quite a bit in the last year has pushed back on the Texans hype. So we'll talk about what he said once we play it a little bit later. I did want to clean some things up. I mentioned how the Astros had a less than stellar draft grade from CBS Sports. They got a C. I didn't give you the grade. They got a C. And mostly it was because of their lack of draft picks in the top 100. They only had one guy who they drafted in the top 100 in their class, according to, well, I think they only had maybe it was only one top 100 pick, but just the way it played out. So that is why. A lack of, I guess, front-end talent in their draft class gave them that C. And I did mention I wanted to give you the opportunity to have a chance to maybe do a show or at least a podcast from the studio, and that is because Rock the Mic is back. Rock the Mic is a chance for you, if you have an existing podcast or one that you just want to start, you have a chance to have it hosted on ESPN U Houston on our YouTube channel. Just go to rockthemic975@gmail.com and post or email us a 3 to 5 minute video on your best Houston sports take. It could be anything. We are not putting any guardrails on what you can talk about as far as Houston sports. If you have something you feel strongly about, turn that into a video, whether it's just you or you have someone you already do a podcast with or someone you want to do a podcast with. ESPN Houston is the place for you. We're going to have a finale at Carbach Brewery. So send in those videos to rockthemic975@gmail.com. Give you a chance. I mean, we've had success stories. I believe Barry Laminack was a member or competitor in Rock the Mic and found his way, obviously, to hosting a show here. We know Barry's a great stand-up comedian as well. So if you have any interest, hit us up. We certainly want to hear from you. So we're gonna hit the sound. Austin's going to – I just put the sound on the rundown, so Austin's going to make sure it's ready to go. So we had D'Amico discussing C.J. Stroud. We'll get to that. And also, as I mentioned, one individual doesn't think the Texans are going to have the type of year a lot of us think they are. And it's interesting to hear, considering he covers the team for a living and also is someone who makes appearances on ESPN 975. It's nice to hear a dissenting opinion. We can argue with it. We can agree with it. I don't think what he said was unreasonable about why he doesn't think they're going to win the division. Some of it's out of their control. And hey, you make some news, you say it, it winds up here. So I appreciate that. A couple of other things before we get to that sound. So we talked about the Astros as far as their draft, but they're back starting tomorrow. Big series against the Mariners. They're only one game back. It's been a inconsistent first 96 games of the season. They had played better, certainly. Were, if not the best team, one of the best teams over the last 30 days or so. Then you go lose to the Rangers. You play better against the Rangers, you're already tied for first place because the Mariners were awful in their final series. Unfortunately, the Astros lose 2 out of 3. And I haven't seen anywhere just yet what the rotation is. Maybe Chandler Rome or Brian McTaggart has said how they're going to start back on Friday, but I assume it'll be some combination of Fromber, Hunter Brown, then Ronel Blanco, and that gives you a good shot. Look, the Mariners' lineup stinks, at least when it comes to being a potential division winner. The Astros, we know, healthy, are a much better ball club, and maybe even injured are going to be better. The Mariners have had some success against the Astros this year. Let's hope for that to change, because I won't call it a turning point in mid to late July, excuse me. But if you can take 2 out of 3, you're at a minimum tied for first place. And of course, obviously, if a disaster strikes and you get swept, if one of the extremes happen and you get swept, then you're now 4, not completely out of the race, but it is kind of a punch in the nose when you think you are right behind this Mariner team who can't get out of their own way. Either they're losing late because they blow a lead, or they're just not hitting the baseball, which has kind of been their issue all year long. So the Astros begin their regular season and really the home stretch at this point. Yeah, it's July, and you're only one game out, so this is probably going to go into September. I don't know if the Astros are going to run away. In fact, I don't think they will. I think what happened this last month may be a bit of a regression to the mean. They were never a team that should have been 10 games behind. I just don't know if they're a team that can run away with this division, even with how mediocre it is, because as much as we talk about looking ahead in the Mariners, the Rangers are only 4 games behind the Astros. And as bad as the Rangers have been coming off a World Series, they're right there too. It's just a product of how mediocre the division has been, and the Astros have been part of that. Of course, the Angels and A's are afterthoughts completely, but it's a 3-team race at this point. Very much like it was last year, but there was more competency last year. This one is like, who's wheezing to the finish line? The Astros have played like a team who may have a strong kicker. Maybe getting back in the race was the strongest part of this year, and now they're going to be fighting and clawing with the Mariners and the Rangers to close it out. So we'll see. But it starts tomorrow. Big series in Seattle. I like the Astros taking 2 out of 3. I like if the pitching staff is going to be, or the rotation is going to be, Fromber, Brown, and Ronel Blanco, with your lineup compared to the Mariners, although that hadn't seemed to matter in the previous matchups this year very much, give me the Astros taking 2 out of 3 and being tied for first place at the end of the weekend. And, of course, known baseball guy that I am, I'm probably going to be completely wrong, and that's fine. But the Astros should at least take 2 out of 3 in that series as they start the post-All-Star break stretch of the year. So I mentioned D'Amico talking about C.J. Stroud and a certain reporter close to this station talking about the Cubs winning the division. We'll talk about that when we come back. We'll hear from those two. We'll see what they've said and what we think of it. If anyone else wants to call in, the number is 713-780-3776. We've got a couple more segments to go here. We will be back.
This is the Del Olalea Show
on ESPN 97.5 and 92.5.
Broadcasting live from the Veritex Community Bank Studios, here's Del Olalea.
First time we saw this Texans team in training camp. They've been in the building for days, but, you know, they're out in the field. And the media is getting to talk to them, and some of the Houston media is being interviewed. And that's part of the, excuse me, as I almost spit into a mic, that's part of the thing that comes with your team being good. The people who cover them are now requested to do national stuff. Now, DJ Bieniemy is part of ESPN. He covers the Texans for ESPN. You know, you've heard him on this station as well. He went on the Mina Kimes show, and he said something you probably wouldn't have expected from someone who covers the Texans, but I guess you would call him a dissenting opinion if you think the consensus is that the Texans are winning the division. Here's DJ Bieniemy on who he thinks is winning the AFC South.
So it sounds to me like you are going Texans, Colts, Jags, Titans.
So
you were very high in the Titans last year. Do you remember that?
I do remember that. I was very high on, you know, I was high on Mike Vrabel. You know, his old line was just bad. So I think, I think I haven't done my research. I think the Colts end up winning the division. One of my biggest things is, the Texans schedule scares me. It scares me. It scares me.
Like, wow. Let it not be schedule. Said that you were biased. Yeah, what a shocking pick.
Yeah, I think the Colts are going to win. Because, like, I like the schedule. I like the pieces that they have. I think AR is going to take, like, if he stays healthy, he's going to take, you know, a massive. But I still think the Texans make the playoffs. I think they get one of the wild card spots.
So that's DJ Bieniemy. Citing. Like he needs to side. It's not House of the Dragon. But he believes that the Colts are winning the division. And you know what? If you just go by strength of opponent and schedule, the Texans, fourth toughest schedule in the league based off of opponents' rosters. That's rough. Now, the Colts were a team who were a bad throw from their backup to their third-string running back away from potentially winning the division last year. We know in that game. That turned out to be for the division because the Jags stunk it up in their home game when they had a chance to clinch. Or excuse me, I think it was a road game against the Titans. But they had a chance to clinch the division. That game turned out to be how the Texans won the division. And the Colts are right there with the backup, who they had to play for most of the year because Anthony Richardson couldn't get healthy or stay healthy because of all the hits he took early on. So if you think Anthony Richardson's a better player, certainly has a better, higher ceiling than Gardner Minshew, then you might feel pretty good about the Colts. I just don't think I've heard anyone, maybe outside of Indianapolis, voice that opinion. And you start to think about if the Texans aren't going to win the division, how do they make the playoffs? What's their path? Because if the schedule's too tough for them to do that, to win the AFC South, which isn't considered a strong division, is their record going to be good enough to beat out some of the wild card contenders in the AFC? Okay, let's lay it out. If we're going through, if we're going with DJ Bieniemy's prediction, what's the path for the Texans to make the playoffs? The AFC West belongs to the Chiefs. You can, until proven otherwise, let's give the AFC East to the Bills. They may not have the best roster in the division, but let's see someone beat them. They won the winner take all game against the Dolphins last year. So we, is it the Jets? Is it the Dolphins? Let's give it to the Bills. The AFC North could be one of three teams, I think. I wouldn't put Pittsburgh in the contender status for that division. But Cleveland, if their quarterback plays well, we know the Ravens are there. And then, of course, the Bengals, if Burrow can stay healthy. So if the AFC North is probably your strongest division, let's give them two playoff teams, plus the wild card, plus the division winner. So let's give them two wild cards, plus the division winner. So the Texans beating out the Dolphins and the Jets and the Bills, because let's say one of those two teams wins the division. Now the Texans have to beat out one of those. And let's say the AFC South belongs to the Colts. The AFC West, no one's making the playoffs from there except for the Chiefs. So it's a tough road if you're not winning the division. The AFC, the stronger conference with more playoff teams you would consider Super Bowl contenders. I hope they do win the division, because I don't see their wild card record being better than these other teams. Because even the Dolphins, who are in the AFC East, they've got a middling schedule. And, well, maybe the game they play against each other determines who makes the playoffs. So I don't think the path to the playoffs for the Texans, if they're not winning this division, because I don't think the Colts are going to be great. I don't think a wild card spot is the way. I don't think their record would be good enough if we're positioning the Colts as maybe a 10-win team. So if the Texans are winning 9, are they getting into the playoffs in the AFC? I don't think so. I'm not saying DJ is wrong for his pick. I just don't see a path for the Texans to do that, to be a wild card team in this AFC. Your best spot or your best chance in the AFC South is to go ahead and win the division if you're going to make the playoffs. Because, you know, Pittsburgh's still hanging around too. They'll probably finish at least 9-8, just how it is. Let's go to the Texans head coach. He spoke about their rookie class. We heard from Nick Caserio about the rookie class. Here's their approach for DeMeco when talking about his rookie class and their expectations.
Yeah, for him, now is your second year. Now it's, you know, there's a comfort level, so you can be a little bit more vocal, right, to the entire team, not just speaking to the offense.
Sorry, that's on me. I told Austin to grab the CJ Stroud clip, and I forgot. So that was DeMeco, and we'll hear from him again here. Let me set it up the right way. DeMeco's talking about CJ Stroud and what he can improve on. We know all the talent, great rookie year. DeMeco on what CJ Stroud can improve on.
Yeah, for him, now is your second year. Now it's, you know, you, I say there's a comfort level, so you can be a little bit more vocal, right, to the entire team, not just speaking to the offense, but the team has his ear, and he can lean on that a little bit more. And just, CJ doesn't have to change anything. CJ just has to be himself, right? And that's what's made CJ a special player, is just him being himself. He's great family, raised the right way, does all things the right way. He just continues to be himself, and guys will follow him because of how he works, right? How he shows up with a great attitude. That's why guys will follow him.
What is the thing that you are?
Yeah, from all the offseason clips, it appears that the offense and the guys he's going to be throwing the ball to have gravitated towards CJ. I don't think there's any question about his standing in that room, but, you know, you got to be a leader of the entire team, and the best way to lead, at least initially, is to show out on the field. Defenders will love you if they know no matter what they do, they've got a quarterback who can either make up for a mistake or capitalize on something they do to put the team in a position to score. I think leading by example for CJ is going to be easy. Can he rally the team, the entire team around him? I think he'll be fine. His play is going to be so good, and we can tell, at least initially by his personality, that guys like him. So, you know, a coach is always going to ask for more. And it's not a bad court to strike for D'Amico to make sure CJ is the man for everyone as opposed to the offense. I don't think Texans fans or the Texans will have much to worry about there. I don't want to say aura. That's a thing now on social media. He's got that aura. But from all accounts, not only did you pick the right player as far as talent, you picked the right guy as far as personality as well. So they're in good hands, and year two is beginning in earnest now. I think they're probably an hour. They've been done for about an hour or so with on the field work, and we're already at that point, Austin, where people are look. It happens every year, where people are talking about the timing and 7-on-7 and the accuracy on 7-on-7. I think once you put up the numbers CJ did, nothing that happens in training camp matters that much as far as what it looks like, because we've seen it when it matters the most. Like, I don't know that him hitting Tank Dell on the run in 7-on-7 means that much to me when I saw him hit Tank Dell to beat the Bucks. You know, when if it's Jaden Daniels, sell me on what he looks like as a rookie. All the positivity you can bring to the table. But CJ could stink it up all training camp, and I'm going to be like, okay, that's odd, but I've seen what happened in the regular season. Let me wait till week one before I make a real determination and get worried. I get it. You're out there. You're tweeting out content. You're filming videos. But at this point, it's weird to say he's a proven commodity. He's proven. What is he going to do in training camp that's going to be like, well, he's taking the next step? I feel like I've seen quite a bit. And nothing that happens from July 18th through early September, well, I guess late August when training camp officially ends, I guess, it's going to mean much to me. Stay healthy. If you want to play in the preseason, cool. Get a couple series in. But I think we know what CJ Stroud's about and what that offense could be. Of course, you want the new additions to look great. But even those guys are veterans. You expect those guys to be. Even if you don't have high hopes for Joe Mixon, you expect them to be at least average. And Stephon Diggs is going to be a big contributor as well. I appreciate the good news about CJ, but it doesn't move me. I've seen it all already. I know what he is. But I guess it's better than he threw 4 pick sixes. It is better than that. So the CJ Tank connection continues to be strong, and people are tweeting about it out there. You guys know, if you're on social media, you can see all the people who are out there tweeting about the Texans and getting you all excited. We got one more segment to go. We've played some audio in this segment. We're going to play some audio in the next segment from SEC Media Days. It was an awkward interaction as they were ending the show. Lane Kiffin on the set with Paul Feinbaum, and Lane Kiffin has receipts. He remembers what Paul Feinbaum said about him, and now as Ole Miss is a team challenging for a playoff spot, he decided now's the time to let everyone remember that Paul Feinbaum was wrong about him and, of all people, wrong about Miley Cyrus as well. We'll talk about that when we come back.
Broadcasting live from the Veritex Community Bank Studios, it's the Del Olalea Show
on ESPN 97.5 and 92.5.
Now back to Del Olalea.
So Lane Kiffin has never been one to hold his tongue. And in some instances, he wasn't speaking from a position of strength. Whether it be getting fired at USC or leaving Tennessee almost in the middle of the night and having Knoxville almost riot as he was walking out the door. Well, now, after spending some time at FAU and winning a lot of games there, and now he has Ole Miss as a team that is a playoff favorite. Not sure about winning a title, but that's an Ole Miss team a lot of people expect to be in the 12-team playoff. So he is on the set with Paul Feinbaum here. Paul Feinbaum, we've heard from him this week already. He's one of the voices of college football, certainly Southern college football. Maybe the voice when it comes to Southern college football. So Paul Feinbaum has a show. He's got one of the stars of the league on his set. And here's the interaction between Kiffin and Feinbaum, and somehow Miley Cyrus is involved as well.
college game day, you're going to make your big splash. And they were watching it, because I know the other person in the room that was watching it with them. And you said, what a joke I was, and I'm the Miley Cyrus of college football coaching, and I should be fired. And they looked at each other, and later that night I was fired.
Yeah, by the way.
So, but hey, look what happened. I would have never gotten to work for Coach Saban. All these other things wouldn't happen. So I appreciate you for helping getting me fired. Thank you.
I mean, look at what you're doing today. You're predicted to go to the playoffs. I mean, look at Miley Cyrus. She's had a nice comeback.
So you were wrong on that. I mean, you put me down with that. So really, I don't really know what you're good at. Like, you predicted that Coach Saban was done. That didn't happen. You basically said Miley Cyrus stinks, and she's still going.
Yeah. Well, anyway, it's all.
He was going to say, but anyway, it's always good to have you on, Lane. Yeah. Lane's at a point where you can't tell him anything. He has used good seasons at Ole Miss to, is manipulate the right word? Negotiate himself into bigger deals when other teams come calling, or even the illusion of other teams coming calling for his services. He has found his way to get a lucrative deal from Ole Miss. He is loved there because, you know, they're kind of, after the Hugh Freeze thing, going to Matt Luke after Hugh Freeze wasn't a great time at Ole Miss. They have they found a way to bounce back, and Lane Kiffin's, you know, he's got his alleged skeletons that may keep other programs away. But Ole Miss is like, what do we have to lose? And they have benefited from his coaching, his style of play, and certainly his arrogance as well has all led to good things for them so far since he's been there. And I kind of laid out what happened with him and why Paul Feinbaum might have talked about him that way. He didn't get run out of Tennessee. He ran from Tennessee to go take the USC job. He had a connection there, was the OC during some of their glory years. So he was on that staff with Sarkisian. And he left. Didn't work out at USC. And, you know, Paul Feinbaum defending the honor of the SEC was going to rip Lane Kiffin apart. Lane Kiffin being a good football coach just took some time. Went to become the OC at the Alabama Rehabilitation Program. Worked out for him there. He was one of the forebearers of changing the way we think about Alabama football from let's hand it off 45 times a game and control the clock and beat you into submission to a team that gets first-round wide receivers drafted, has first-round quarterbacks drafted. Hell, one first-round quarterback was so good, a future second-round quarterback and Heisman contender went to Oklahoma and then got drafted in the second round. That's the type of talent that's been there. And Lane Kiffin can be looked at as someone who helped change how Alabama does things offensively. Sark followed him. Hell, Bill O'Brien's been there. Brian Daboll's been there. Saban's hired the right guys. Stacked talent around them, and those guys have succeeded. You think about it, Sark makes the playoff. We've got Kiffin maybe on the verge of making a playoff. Brian Daboll's the head coach of the Giants after being an OC with Buffalo, after being an OC with Alabama. And now you have Bill O'Brien, who's coaching Boston College after, let's not say failed OC with the Patriots, but it wasn't great. The Mac Jones stuff wasn't great. I don't know who you blame completely for that, whether it be Bill Belichick or Mac Jones, but Bill O'Brien, probably the one going down the ladder while everyone else is climbing. He's the one dropping down further and further where now he's in the Northeast in a place that he's familiar with, but it's Boston College. They're an okay program. They've had better years. We'll see what Bill O'Brien can do there. So Lane Kiffin's not having it. If a man's doing well, he will tend to remember things that you said about him. I do like, we didn't get the end of it because this is still where the clip got off. I do like Paul Feinbaum trying to get out of that disaster, that awkwardness by going to break. I think they might have been actually at the end of the show, but at least I know they're going to a break. And Paul Feinbaum's like, oh, didn't think this was going to go the way it did. He probably thought, hey, I'm just going to have a normal conversation talking about how great the Ole Miss program is. Lane Kiffin wasn't having it. He ain't going to rip me to shreds and think I'm not going to remember. And I strive for that. You know what? I hope I reach a point where I'm like Lane Kiffin. I've had that type of success, and I can remember, you said this, you said this. Yes, I'd love to come on your show. Oh, not to talk about football, to talk about what you said about me. Okay. You're in a good position, man. And I think that team's going to be pretty good this year. Not surprisingly, the SEC is really, really stacked with teams. There's some nonsense involved when they always talk about how they should have more spots because they're playing each other. But I think Ole Miss legitimately is a good football team. And are they a contender to win the conference? Not with Georgia and Alabama involved, but in Texas, of course. But as a team, maybe they're that fourth team who makes the playoff. I think they're there. I think they're a team that people will get familiar with throughout the year, but they're not the glamour team just yet. Because you have all these big names, but they're a team that's going to play an exciting brand of football. So check out Ole Miss this year. If you want to call them a dark horse to win the conference, but certainly a team that you can point to and go, okay, they may lose two or three games, but you can't tell me they're not one of the maybe best 10 teams in the country and deserve a playoff spot. And that'll probably be a lot of the debate. Who are the wild cards? Who are the at-larges who deserve them over others? So we're just going to enter into a different debate because for the most part, I mean, last year, I guess, aside, because some people thought Georgia should have made the playoff rightfully so. They probably would have won it, but they did lose to Alabama. Ole Miss is one of those teams where they finished ninth in the country last year, but they're going to be one of those teams right in that fringe where people are saying, should it be Ole Miss? Should it be like a Penn State? But I love talking about it because we're getting closer and closer. I think the SEC Media Days will probably be the ones that bring the most noise and content. We've already had the Nick Saban stuff. We've had his ex-players responding to comments he's made about Alabama not making the conference title game. The Big Ten's probably going to be pretty bland. I can't think of many personalities. Harbaugh's not even there anymore. Ryan Day he's all in on this year. He needs to beat Michigan and make the playoff. And maybe they'll do that without beating Michigan. But there are no real personalities in the Big Ten. I care what Luke Fickell has to say about something. Sherrone Moore at Michigan. I mean, he does have that one clip from last year. But I don't think he's going to be a guy who says anything. I think if we're looking for guys to set a tone, it's going to end this week with the SEC. The rest of the stuff is going to be pretty basic. Tomorrow, we won't be in the building. We're going to be at East River 9. You can come out and join us. It's a celebration of the Open Championship or the British Open or just the Open. Whatever pretentious thing you want to call that golf tournament, so be it. But we're going to be celebrating it at East River 9 all day. The entire lineup is going to be out there from 7 to 6. So come out and join us. Hopefully there's good weather. I know it's raining today, but if there's good weather, come out and play the golf, join us, and also watch the professionals do it as well. So I am done. Gallant and George are up next, and George is back. So it'll be Gallant, George, and Austin. I want to thank Austin today. He'll be with me as well on Friday. And then the Killer Bees follow them. And with that, what do we do, Austin?
We did it!
That we did. I'll talk to you tomorrow.
Step into the world of power, loyalty, and luck.
I'm going to make him an offer he can't refuse.
With family, cannolis, and spins mean everything.
Now, you want to get mixed up in the family business.
Introducing The Godfather at ChumbaCasino.com. Test your luck in the shadowy world of The Godfather slot.
Someday, I will call upon you to do a service for me.
Play The Godfather now at ChumbaCasino.com.
Welcome to the family.
No.